I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't Me, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm John McKenzie, the Rodrigo of the podcast, finding a new lease of life after trundling around for the last few weeks. And I'm joined by the Crescencio Somerville of the podcast, Jacob Stanbridge, injecting us with a much-needed burst of pace. And finally, the Joffy Gale heart of the podcast, mainly because of all of the dribbling, it's Tom Alderson. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, John. Yeah, I've just been singing Champions of Europe pretty much on repeat, even just by myself, since about 4:15 yesterday. I'm having quite a nice time doing it as well.
Yeah, good. And it sounds like on your trip back from Elland Road yesterday, you were doing plenty of dribbling as well.
You'll have to ask the two girls that had the pleasure of sitting next to me on the way back to Manchester Piccadilly, because I think I was snoring and I don't think they appreciated my little power nap on the way home.
But no dribbles spilled out, no.
Not that I'm aware of.
Jacob, how are you? You've had a trip to Elland Road as well, but a little bit more of an effort for you to get there than it is for Tom. So how was yours?
Yeah, it was good. I've come up from Birmingham, for those who don't know, which was nice. Although my train journey back was interrupted by some very angry Wolves fans shouting for pretty much the entire journey back. And so I didn't get the chance to have a power nap, which I probably would have quite liked. So maybe I'd class myself right now as feeling less like injecting a burst of needed pace as Somerville, but instead more giving an injection of Jean Moutinho running around with cramp towards the end of the game.
Yeah,
but that's fair. Yeah, all right. How are you, John?
Yeah, great. Nice to scrape another draw late in the game, which seems to be becoming a bit of a habit for us, isn't it? And I'm not sure, but I think we're pretty much on the level of draws that we had last season already, which is pretty remarkable. Maybe one fewer.
We went months without drawing last year at points, didn't we? Like, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's get into this because there's lots to talk about. And thankfully, it's not the same stuff that we always talked about. There is a little bit more positivity around the place. So let's jump in by just talking about the game itself. So this is the game summary where we just chat through the flow of the game. So as everyone will know by now, we picked up a 1-1 draw against Wolves yesterday at Elland Road. In terms of the lineup, it was quite interesting, I think. There was a lot of heads turned when the lineup graphic came out from Leeds United, not least because they have an inability to put anything other than a 4-2-3-1 lineup out and everyone gets confused. And obviously the whole week everyone had been thinking, like, what possible lineup are we going to see here? In the end, we knew it was going to be a 4-4-2, but in the end it was a 4-4-2 with Pascal Strauch at centre midfield, which I think surprised most people. I don't think many people had expected that. And then the other surprise was Dan James at centre forward, despite the fact that everyone thinking that Rafinha was going to be playing as a 10 because of, again, of the Leeds United lineup graphic. But beyond that, it was largely as expected. We had Dallas at left back, Shackleton at right back, and Rafinha started on the right and Harrison on the left. The first half was fairly uneventful. Wolves obviously got their goal in the 10th minute through a fairly shambolic piece of defending all round. And for the rest of the half, I think although Leeds did control the ball, they didn't really translate it into much in the way of good chances. In the second half, Roberts came on for Harrison and Dan James was pushed out wide. And then when Rafinha got injured about 10 minutes into the half, Somerville came on to replace him. And then soon after, Joe Gelhart came on to replace Click and Roberts dropped back into midfield. And I think there's a few comments being made recently about how Roberts is just having to fill in everywhere where he's needed at the moment. He's becoming a bit of a forward Stuart Dallas in that sense. Again, Leeds controlled the ball in the second half, and as the half wore on, Wolves dropped deeper and deeper. Leeds still didn't create a raft of good chances, but Gelhardt looked much more lively, and he had a couple of chances from just dribbling into the box, a good chance from some nice build-up as well, with a nice bit of interchange with Rodrigo. And with the game heading to a close, Gelhardt dribbled through the Wolves' defence and won a penalty, which Rodrigo converted. The draw is probably fair in the end, but there's still some concerns about our capacity to create dangerous chances, especially given the fact that Wolves barely put us under any sustained pressure at any point in the game. But yeah, as we've said, nice to get a late draw and to have results go fairly well for us, with the exception of Watford somehow pulling out a 5-2 and win over Everton, which will forever blow my mind. But right, let's move on to the interrogation. So this is the part of the show where I put five questions to the guys about the game itself, and we'll see where we go from there. So let's start with a nice, easy question. After the horror show of last weekend, what changed this weekend, Tom?
Basically, Wolves gave us all the time and space in the world to build a part of our own half, which just meant that it made our build-up, which last week looked, well, it was terrible last week, it was fine, so we didn't really have any problems doing that. The interesting thing for me would have been, would they have still done that if it had been 0-0 for the whole game, basically, rather than just sitting off and just trying to block deep?
Are you sounding the game state klaxon? Is that what you're doing, Tom?
I'm doing it without saying it, just so people... I have got game state written down on my notes, though. Maybe I should have said it.
You have that written down on your notes every week, don't you?
Pretty much, yeah. Well, I have the same notes. I just put game state and just put we can't build up in wide areas anymore. But yeah, Southampton's press completely killed us in our build up. So the fact that Wolves sat off meant that we could get the ball into their half, and just meant that we could actually sort of sustain some sort of pressure in their half, even if it wasn't particularly. Like, we didn't really create any threat. It was more like threatening without creating any chances in the end, but the fact that we were there made it better than last week.
I'd add to that that our structure probably plays a role in that as well. It's not that we've been like, it's not like there's been an incredible sort of contrast when this season between when we've played the back three and not played a back three, but it is better when we play with the 4-1-4-1, or in this case the 4-4-2. And similarly, on a kind of structural point, I'd also throw in not having Rodrigo as the most forward player. When we play a front two, like we saw yesterday and we saw with the Newcastle game, Rodrigo's sort of movement from that line to wherever he kind of wants to go feels like more of the game plan instead of something that maybe neuters what Leeds are trying to do. And so I think that probably helped as well, the fact that we still had somebody quote-unquote occupying the defenders, although I'm not sure how effective Dan James necessarily was doing that. It meant that Rodrigo had a bit more freedom to do what he does best.
Yeah, I think I largely agree with that. And I think that's mainly to do with the fact that you end up with an extra player in midfield. And I think as well, often when you're playing in the 4-4-2, we are playing against teams who tend to not want to keep the ball at the back or play it out from the back, which means that your forward press doesn't really matter that much anyway. So I think a combination of all of those things means that we end up with an extra player in midfield. And rather than what it looks like usually when we have a three-man midfield with a deeper player who ends up playing as a pivot, we play with a flat two, someone in front of them, and then one of the flat two drops in as a pivot in the build-up as well, which I think all adds to that. So question two, Jacob, Leeds seemed to control the game a little bit better in the second half. Why do you think this was?
For me, I think the biggest part of that was where sort of possession was happening on the pitch. It felt like we were occupying a considerably higher sort of base level on the pitch. Our centre halves felt that there were quite a lot of times in the second half where Cooper and Llorente were possessing the ball around the halfway line just into Wolves' half. And if you compare where Raúl Jiménez is doing his sort of defensive pressure on the centre halves, it is really distinct between the two halves of the game. In the first half, I was starting to observe him coming into defensive action maybe about halfway into up from in our half, like towards the centre circle and things like that, but it was considerably deeper in the second half. And so I think that Wolves inevitably just get pushed back a lot more, and not always, but quite often then when the ball gets cleared after not necessarily a really good chance from us, but like Tom was saying, us getting into a threatening space, it's perhaps more likely that one of our centre-halves or Pascal or something is going to retrieve the ball. There were occasional Wolves counters, but I think that generally we'd get it back and be able to do something again.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. The fact that we were winning the ball up higher meant that we could just keep sustaining the pressure on them, and just meant that they were more inclined to sit deeper and deeper. The one thing I would add, maybe, that I'm not sure if this is right or not, but I kind of felt we were actually better when Roberts was playing in a more midfield role compared to Click. I didn't think Click was particularly good yesterday. I thought he was sort of poor moving the ball forward, and he kind of misplaced a lot of passes that were probably quite straightforward to do. And I think Roberts, like, as much as people will always like find criticism of Roberts, I just think he's better like offering for the pass and moving the ball forward, and I just think that helped us sustain the pressure a bit more.
Yeah, I definitely agree that Wolves just seem to drop deeper and deeper through the game. I think there's a lot of people making very positive comments about Stuart Dallas in the second half. And I think we should maybe talk about that, because the way that it felt to me on the rewatch was that, you know, Dallas, because he was playing a fullback, he was able to just push forward into a fair amount of open space in the second half, which sort of gives him a little bit more momentum, a little bit more impetus. He bundled through a few challenges and got the ball into advanced areas as well. I wondered how much you two thought that sort of Wolves' slight circumspection in terms of their positioning actually added to that, whether or not that was something that was more to do with him.
I would agree with that. The fact that he had space to move into made him probably look better than he actually was, even though it is like a useful thing to have someone to move the ball forward from that left back spot. And it's something that why he looked good at left back in the Championship perhaps, and hasn't really looked good at left back in the Premier League last year, because he would just put under, whenever he was put under pressure and in playing in either full back position, to be fair, he just hasn't looked that good really.
I do broadly agree with that. I think obviously there's been a lot of talk from around the players, the coaching staff, the media around the galvanising role of the fans as the second half wore on. And I think that Dallas, the bits of what Dallas did that people have picked out, I think coincided with that quite well. And so I think that you can probably talk about some kind of positive psychological aspects of the game. But I do broadly agree with what you're saying. And we weren't seeing it prior in the game when Wolves were at that little bit higher up the pitch, and I don't think that those two things are coincidental.
So question three, what difference do you think not having Rafinha on the pitch made? Because I do think that was a sort of point at which things sort of changed a little bit as well. So we'll go with you first on this, Jacob. What did you make of that change from Rafinha to, I guess, Somerville?
I guess the biggest thing for me is it stopped us being over-reliant on one player. Now, obviously, I would rather have Rafinha on the pitch, but look, there's been some talk recently just about Aston Villa and people talking about the loss of Jack Grealish and how it's been replacing with those other players, and the sort of comparison of having one person who you run all your play through, and just seeing quite how much Rafinha was like coming very deep at points. He was in the left back zone at one point, even though he was playing right wing. I guess that it maybe forced the team to have to think we need to run combination play a little bit more, and we can't just give it to Rafinha and he does something spectacular. And it's interesting because obviously that didn't result in a great showing from us in an attacking sense in the Southampton game. But I don't know, maybe it's part of the psychology of Rafinha starting and then going off, but like, what are we going to do now? Coming into it, and yeah, force the team to combine better. And I think that Somerville, particularly without setting the game on fire, like, did good runs and benefited from nice passing work with Roberts and Shackleton on that side.
Yeah, it definitely felt as though we got into those wide areas that I love to talk about when we had Somerville on the field. And I noticed that, like, the only time really that we saw Dan James do the same, obviously in the second half, because in the first half he was playing centrally, but was about the 84th minute. he got like a ball across the box, which had to be cleared out by a centre-back. And that was the first time we'd seen it really happen from that side. And those are the sorts of chances that we were seeing Leeds create quite regularly last season. And so I agree with you in the sense that it does feel as though when you don't have Rafinha on the field, you sort of have to think, right, well, we're doing the system stuff now because we're not just going to be able to create through him. Tom Alderson, what's your take on the Rafinha not being on the pitch?
One thing that kind of helped us sort of build up in those wide areas and do their combination play like you two have mentioned is that Somerville stayed wider as well and just basically played as a proper right winger, more of an old-fashioned style winger rather than Rafinha, who's like more inclined to cut inside. And Rafinha not there as well, I think you kind of touched on this with Dan James, is that it sort of brings more balance to your play, that if you're not just looking for one player, Wolves kind of are stretched to an extent by the having to defend both wings. And even though it didn't really lead to us being any more or less threatening with Rafinha not on the pitch, I would feel, because you obviously get those individual moments from Rafinha where he will just do something, and that game did in the end just need an individual moment to happen. So that's like, it was good that you had Gildart to do that, because otherwise I think if he hadn't come on and Rafinha hadn't been there, I think this conversation would probably be a little bit different and probably a little bit more negative than it currently is.
I think I should stress at this point as well, this is not us making the argument that we're better without Rafinha on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
and also that we're not trying to say that there's like a distinction between Rafinha and the system, because obviously we had Rafinha in the system last season and the system clicked, to use the Waves Hand magic word that people like to use at the moment. And so I don't think it's quite so simple to just be like, Rafinha on, therefore no system, Rafinha off, therefore system. As you mentioned, like in the end, it took a moment to get the point in this game. But I do think it's worth at least talking about that at this point, because it's something that we have talked about a little bit as we go forward. And I suppose that if there is a possibility that Rafinha may not be playing in the next couple of games because of the injury that he picked up, which we don't know about at this point, the noises have been fairly positive. I think he put out some kind of social media post suggesting that it's everything's fine. But I think it is good to recognise that, you know, there are positives as well, that not having him on the field can actually allow us to play in that system heavy way a little bit more as well. We've already mentioned the two youngsters. I've got a little bit of an Aggie question here, just saying, how much of an indictment is it that when youngsters Somerville and Gellhart came on, they looked more dangerous than the fairly expensive talent we had on the pitch at that point? Tom Alderson, what do you make of that?
I think the thing with Somerville and Gellhart, they were sort of more so with Gellhart, because I think my kind of take on Somerville was that he was a bit tentative, and I know there were some good things about him staying out wide, but I just wanted him to go at players a little bit more than he did, and I think Gellhart really did that, as we saw for the goal. And the fact that Gellhart did that meant that it was sort of what we needed it at that moment, because I think that was the only way we were going to break down Wolves' defence, because Dan James and Rodrigo, like they're really only threatening when they've got space to move into. And if the Wolves' defence is so deep, then they struggle to sort of... Rodrigo was I would say, good yesterday, but I don't think Dan James really brought anything, especially as the game moved on, I would say. But yeah, like I said, Gildart was like really good. And he did, whilst he didn't completely leave the line in like a Patrick Bamford kind of way, because he did drop deeper, it kind of gave us a little bit more of a focal point. And then obviously he did that individual moment for the goal, which was very good.
A couple of questions here. I suppose with the one thing to cover Somerville, and I'll come to you on this, Jacob, but I think it's hard not to judge Somerville against the level of players that are playing, because we are so thin on the ground that you almost want these players to come in hitting the ground running. And I think the way that I'm thinking about Somerville is that I'm comparing him to Jan Pereira, and I'm already more happy with him than I've ever been with Pereira. So I think that's maybe a good starting point on Somerville. I didn't think Somerville was amazing yesterday, and I think that it's hard to sort of judge the players who came on in that game because there was that whole, there's the whole emotional side to it as well, which is obviously great, don't get me wrong, but it's hard to sort of read that game as anything other than we were playing sort of fairly ambulatory football, and then we brought on two youngsters and then they ended up like getting a point out of the game for us, which is how it went and is good. But I think it's good to not get carried away. And I think with Somerville, that's the way I've been thinking of him, just sort of focusing on how do I compare him to other players that we've had in those sorts of situations before. So, Jacob, what do you make of Somerville on that basis?
I think along similar lines to what you say, and try and think about him in terms of the place that he, the function he fills within the squad. Like, he is a fourth choice winger, and from that, a word that we sort of used when talking about both of them, particularly over the summer, was like wild card. And at points, you'll certainly get something a bit like that from Somerville. I do agree that with what Tom was saying about him not necessarily always being as. Let me rephrase that. I agree with Tom that when he said that sometimes he was a bit tentative, but I was also very encouraged in the moments where he did that very Somerville-y thing. If you watch him in the 23s and get round the outside of the wide defender and then attack the byline almost, and that felt like more than Dan James offered in the entire game. Just really to go back to the initial question you asked about it sort of being an indictment of the expensive talent we have on the pitch. It does feel like sometimes, no, not even sometimes, all the time really, the team gets picked almost on hierarchy as opposed to tactical fit. I think Click ideally probably wouldn't have played that game in that position today. I don't think he's necessarily the right player for that kind of role, but we didn't have anyone to play there. And then the wingers, we spent a lot of money on wide players this summer, and we know from all the seasons gone by that wingers are such an important part of our game from a creative point. And it's very disappointing that we do need to see someone like Somerville come on and even just look exciting in a few moments for us to be saying, oh, that was a good performance, when you've got like £36 million worth of wingers who didn't really offer a lot today.
And then one final thing on Gellhart. Obviously, plenty of positivity about him, but I noticed that this is a game where, as we've talked about with Rodrigo, the structure accommodates him. And as I think you mentioned, he's not playing as a sort of Bamford replacement. He's playing as a player, I think maybe Tom said, that he's playing as a player who likes to drop in and help out. And when you have two players like Rodrigo and Gellhart playing up front, I suppose that could potentially be an issue, and we could end up with the same sort of conversations in the future, I think, about if you've got Bamford available and Gellhart available and you're playing in a single striker system, you go for Bamford every time, right? And so do we have the same situation here where essentially you want to play Gellhart as a second striker, and we barely ever play teams that allow us to accommodate that?
I do worry about that to some extent. I don't know that Gellhart is maybe as guilty of not being able to do some of the Bamford stuff as Rodrigo, but I do share that opinion. I remember an interview that he did towards the end of last season where he was talking about interactions he'd had directly with Bielsa, and Bielsa had said, you've got to be doing more of the in-behind running, and you've got to be and more of that kind of stuff that Bamford is so good at. And I do think we see that a bit more from him in the 23s, although I've not caught the 23s as much this season as last season. But at the same time, as you say, it's going to fall back into that same kind of thing. And it could become the case that Gellhart, at least for Bielsa's Leeds, becomes what I think Rodrigo is, which is best used as off the bench, best used to change the game as opposed to starting, which I don't think a lot of fans are necessarily going to want to hear. But I think because he's something different, he can transform us in the moments where something's not working, but that's not the same thing as being the right player to start a game.
The only thing I would add at the end is that I think because of Gellhart's age, you can teach him to do those Bamfordy things, whereas as we've seen with Rodrigo, it's difficult to teach him how to do the press, and Rodrigo's never going to be like a Bamford style player, but you could see Gellhart moving towards being able to do those things even if it's not his style of play.
Yeah, which I think I normally agree with, but I think the stuff that we get from Bamford, from him being like 2 foot taller than Gellhart, right, which I suppose is kind of the issue. Like you're not expecting Gellhart to come on and be a hold-up striker who's going to bring other players into the game, etc. He's not going to be a player who's going to bring it, be a poacher in the box in the same way Bamford is as well. And as we saw yesterday, like the good moments that we had from him really were for him, for, came from him dropping deep and then picking the ball up and running at defenders, which always, I guess, presupposes that we would want to have a more striker, traditional striker in front of him, I suppose. But this is a problem that will no doubt concern us for many podcasts to come, because I'm sure we'll have him for many seasons to come. So let's move on to the final question in this section, which is this: what do you take away from a game like that going forward from this point? So Tom, what do you take away from this sort of game?
The one thing that I can say you take away from this game is, like, you hope it just gives confidence to the players, because I don't think that the system was any better than it has been the rest of the season. So it's difficult to say that we improved a lot, and that the only thing that might be the cause of the result and the way that we got it, that it might just spur them on and we might just see an improvement through that more than anything else.
The other thing I sort of want to add, although it's an easy thing to sort of talk about when you talk about Leeds at the moment, is that the injury situation makes it sort of strange for me to read too much out of this game, because there will be, we hope, soon a game where Patrick Bamford is back leading the line, and there will be a game where Calvin Phillips is back in the midfield. Not that that was an issue at all today, and things like that. Rafinha, when he's not injured, will be back. Ailing, I could go on. And so some of the things that we're talking about will change just on the fact that different players we're playing, and the system will look different and hopefully better with the different personnel. I'm not sure how much we can read into it beyond like what Tom said about the sort of psychological factor of getting the result in the manner we did.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, I find these sorts of games kind of difficult to come to terms with, because for me, I don't think I've ever really been that worried about the possibility of relegation. I think the fan base are probably taking quite a lot from that game, because after the shambles at Southampton, we sort of looked like a football team again, which is nice to see. And I think, you know, when it comes to looking at that, there's a sort of litany of teams from like 12th down, starting from Aston Villa, who we look on similar points to us, and Wolves are in that group or above that group actually, I think, and just the ability to know that you can come up against a team like Wolves and they will treat you with respect and allow you to sort of largely dominate the ball in the game, I think that's sort of fairly comforting as well. So I guess I take stuff away from that game that I already had to take away from it, but it's just nice to see that it's confirmed that I wasn't completely wide of the mark or something like that. So anyway, I'm rambling at this point. So let's move on to the next section, which is Bring a Topic. So this is the Bring a Topic section, where each of the two guests, are you guests? I guess you're not guests. Co-hosts? We'll call you co-hosts. The two co-hosts bring a topic to the conversation. So let's start with Jacob on this one. What do you want to talk about?
We don't have a positive section today because we didn't lose, which is a big positive in itself. But in light of that, I wanted to touch on Liam Cooper's performance. Now, by mentioning the positive section as I have, I'm sure that how I think he did is pretty apparent. But I wondered what you both made of his display. And I think generally he's having a good season so far.
I completely agree. I think he was very good yesterday and has probably been our best player so far this season, I would say. I think I did worry when the lineups came out that about Stuart Dallas against Traore, and I think that Cooper did a lot to sort of ease those problems that I thought Dallas was going to have. I don't think there was maybe one time that sort of Dallas got beat by Traore and Cooper wasn't there to sweep him up, and because apart from that, Cooper just basically helped to shut Traore out of the game. The only thing that I would say about Cooper yesterday is that I do think that the goal was partly his fault. I think he probably should have won the header for the ball that came in, but then he should have said probably the same about Harrison probably not getting beaten by Semedo. But yeah, apart from that one moment, I thought Cooper was very, very good yesterday.
There's definitely a lot that had to happen in between him missing that header and the ball going in that could be attributed elsewhere in terms of blame. But yeah, I totally agree. I mean, look, I've always been fairly positive about Liam Cooper, and by fairly positive, I mean I'm pretty positive about him. But yeah, look, it's been great actually watching him this season, not least because we thought this might be the season where Pascal Strauch sort of displaces him. And that's not to say that I don't think that Pascal Strauch is a better player. But the way that Liam Cooper's playing at the moment, there's just no concerns with him. And I think, you know, you keep him in the side because he is the captain and he's playing the way that he does. But as I've talked about with Cooper, a lot of what he does is volume specific. So a lot of people like to focus on people who do sort of notable outlier things. But with Liam Cooper, what he does is he does all of the little things fairly well. He's a good front foot defender. He's good distributing the ball. He's good, as you've said, Tom, playing that sort of free role where, as you've said, whenever Dallas got turned by Traore, Cooper was there already aware of where the ball was going to be. And I think he's improved at that side of the game as well as his time with Bielsa has gone on. I really, really like Cooper in every way. And it just, I don't know, there's so many things about Leeds fandom that sort of seems to make its mind up about players, and then that's the way that those players will be. See also, I guess, Tyler Roberts, for example. But I think with Liam Cooper, like, I just can't really remember the last time he made, like, huge errors that we used to see fairly regularly in the Championship. We all know that his big weakness, I think, is backwards defending with the ball over his head. Sometimes he looks a little bit calamitous in those situations, but beyond that, I just don't really think that there's much that he does that wrong. But Jacob, I'll give you the final say in this homily, where we're being fairly positive about Cooper.
There was a moment, and it by no means is it an isolated moment in this game, but one that you've seen in other games as well. But there's a moment that I really remember from being in the stand where he won the ball. I think it was one of the challenges of Traore, get straight up and is then driving us forward to the extent that he ever does with the ball, which is not that far, but he moved us forward, delivered the ball forward, and we were back off on the attack again. And I think that kind of thing is just, it's just very valuable for the team when sometimes we are struggling to construct attacks in a more effective way as we are used to. And this strays quite some way really from the tactics and analytics podcast that we are, but just having someone like that sort of as the leader, I think is really nice to know that there's someone who'll back you up and spur you on through their play. And this season, as John says, he has been really, really great to watch and really, really, just dependable, which makes it so hard then for Pascal to have any opportunity to stake a claim to that spot, because me, as like many Leeds fans, probably say that Pascal is the better option at left centre back. But when Cooper's playing like this, and how could you drop him?
Yeah, one of the things I do in my day job for Analytics FC is that I get to access our Transfer Lab platform, which is basically a scouting platform which attempts to sort of interpret the data a little bit more deeply than just the raw data itself. And every time I go on and look at each season at the lead centre-backs, Liam Cooper always comes out the strongest, which I think would surprise a lot of people. But like I've said, so much of what he does is just like, he does just high volume good stuff. And the problem is that people don't really think about high volume good stuff. They think about like low volume bad stuff, or like outlier stuff. So the things that on ball stuff that just really stand out, or things that you're just like, why on earth has he done this? He's the worst player ever. And the thing with Cooper is he just does so much of that, as you've said, intercepting, winning the ball, moving the ball on, distributing the ball forward. So he will often be the guy with the highest volume progressive passes out of the centre backs, which surprises people, I think, because they would expect Llorente to do that, for example. But it's just a volume thing. He just picks the ball, moves it on. And I think that makes a big difference. I can see why why fans get frustrated with Cooper at times. But I think that you've just got to accept that the occasional clanger is more than made up for by the general good quality of what he does.
That's like how whenever some goalkeeper makes a mistake playing out from the back, it's always the same kind of discourse, isn't it? Why is he doing that? And never do you talk about the 98 times out of 100 that it's absolutely fine.
Tom, what did you want to talk about?
I just felt we needed to talk about Dan James up front. it's mostly been positive today, but I just felt like, why? My first question was, why of the three wingers was he chosen? Because I think he would have been my last choice personally. And I just wanted, like, Do you agree that he was pretty ineffective? Like, I don't remember him doing anything. I mean, I'd probably say in the first half, because obviously he moved out wide in the second half. So do you agree that he was ineffective in that role? Because I think it's difficult to say about his out-of-possession stuff, because after the 10th minute, then there wasn't really much out-of-possession stuff to do as a pressing forward. And that was the kind of the only reason I could think of why Bielsa had gone for him there. And I think because of the fact that Wolves went ahead and then just sat back, we didn't kind of get the advantage of having Dan James pressing in that role.
Yeah, he only had 7 touches, I think, in the first half, which, I don't know, touches are touches, aren't they? Let's move over to you for this one, Jacob. What did you make of Dan James up front?
I met up with Darren from this podcast directly before the game, and we were talking about this and trying to work out who it was going to be, and I almost flippantly said, oh, it will be Dan James up front. It was the last thing I was expecting, and then, of course, it happened. I don't think it was ever going to be Rafinha up front. I think he always is likely to be out on the right, except for occasionally when tactically it makes better sense to use him on the left. But I was expecting it to be Harrison, just based on the fact that we've seen it a few times before. Logically, my suspicion as to why it was to make sure that we had at least one winger who was operating on their stronger foot naturally. And having Harrison on the left meant that was possible. And then I guess the extension of that logic is that James's pace could be used to sort of replicate some of what Bamford does, like by running in behind. But I agree that he really was ineffective in that role. I can only really remember 2 things he did, which was one, running behind at the very beginning of the half where he was offside, and then a combination with Click out wide where we lost the ball and it went out for a throw-in. And apart from that, it's just he wasn't able to get involved in the game at all. Sometimes that will happen with Bamford and he'll feel sort of like quite cut out from the game. But at least with Bamford, like we were sort of hinting at a bit earlier when talking about Gelhardt, Bamford's got the hold-up play and there's that side of Bamford's game, and you're never going to reach Dan James with long passes like that directly to him against Cody, Saïss and Kilman. So yeah, I didn't work for me at all, given that we never played it over their line to try and have them run onto it. They didn't really give us much space for that to happen, as you said, Tom, and they didn't really offer anything else.
Yeah, it's funny because I was expecting him to play up front, partly because he sort of feels like a striker to me anyway, just the stuff that he does. In terms of, like, we talk about his lack of guile or whatever, and I think he's quite one-dimensional out on the left, and he tends to have like a 4-part mantra when he's playing, which is 1, try, go quick down the line. If that doesn't work, pull it back onto your stronger foot and try and get the cross in. If that doesn't work, play it back. And then the 4th point, I guess, is just repeat. I think he must be like it must be a defender's dream, and I think we saw when Hoover came on in the second half, he just allowed him to run, closed him off and forced him out wide. And I think that's the big worry for me with him, is that, okay, we can talk all we want about Dan James playing in the system and learning the system, but he just doesn't have the sort of guile that you want in a 1v1 situation that you get from, as we've already mentioned, players like Somerville, but obviously Rafinha and even Harrison. Harrison is the sort of player who will go around players and cause some problems. And I don't see James doing that through anything other than sheer pace, which means that when you're playing against a team like Wolves, who are sitting a little bit deeper and or playing potentially deep wingbacks, you just lose a lot of his edge, really. So I wasn't really that surprised when he played up front. I think I tweeted this at some point yesterday when the team sheet came out. But again, it's like we talk about this all the time, like that you can put all of the great players that you want in a forward lineup in this lead system, but you do need to have someone, I think, leading the line. And I suppose the great example, the counter example there is Manchester City, who just refused to play any sort of traditional sort of striker, but they can get away with it because they've got like incredible talents in every position, and you know they will eventually just form some kind of breakthrough into the opposition box. But I think for us, we just need someone like Bamford who is going to just pin their centre backs back, do the work that you need to do pressing wise, move the players around to create space for other teammates, and always be in that space in the box when you need to be as well. Did you want to say anything more on this, Tom?
Nothing more about his performance, really. The only thing I would say is that I was expecting Harrison to play up front, just because I think he's kind of done that role before. And if it's the pressing stuff, then I think Harrison's as good or better than James at doing that. And I just think that Bielsa sees Dan James as the first choice of the left wing, so I thought, I just assumed he would play there. I know you said about Rafinha not playing up front, but I think it would have been quite nice to sort of see if that had worked a bit, because the thing that we've mentioned quite a lot is that we want Rafinha sort of getting on the ball in deeper positions rather than in the coming deep and collecting the ball. And I think it would have been a nice opportunity to sort of try that out and see if we could have get him in more threatening positions further up the pitch.
Well, we will see how this all unfolds as the season goes on, no doubt, because we will be playing two strikers next week, I think. So we'll soon find out what the plan is with that. But let's move on to listener questions.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So this is the part of the show where we answer the listeners' questions, surprisingly enough. So let's just jump straight in. Tom, what was more important, the performance or the result? That comes from James.
As in, what is more important generally? I would say the performance wasn't outstanding yesterday. So obviously the result is more important yesterday, because we got a point in a game where, well, I don't think either team looked particularly good, to be honest, but I still don't think we did much apart from possess the ball for long periods of time. In a more sort of general sense, I think like I said earlier, getting a result yesterday should hopefully sort of bring some confidence to the players, because the performance just wasn't there. And I am kind of worried a lot about the fact that the system just doesn't seem to be much of a thing anymore, apart from the few times yesterday when after Rafinha went off and we sort of seemed to be moving back towards doing those more system-based things.
I completely agree with what Tom says. The one thing I'll sort of throw in with that is, I guess maybe a bit of performance based would be Gelhardt's performance, but I think that the predominant thing that will have is a similar kind of like psychological lift to the mood that Tom was talking about in terms of the result. So I think functionally it will do something similar, even though it is a performance thing rather than than a result thing.
Question two. Jacob, will come to you on this as a Strouk stan, like myself. But Claudio Aravena says, Strouk looked a lot more fluid with both his positioning and passing. So do the underlying numbers back up his performance today? Now, we have a few questions about the underlying numbers, but the FBref data hasn't been updated yet. So unfortunately, we can't answer with respect to the underlying numbers. But I think it would be good for us to talk about Strouk playing in the DM position, not least because I'm on record for saying that the gap between Strouk and Phillips at DM, or at least in the pivot, is not as big as people think it is. So was my unfounded faith in him well rewarded today or yesterday, Jacob?
Yeah, I think so. I think he was really strong throughout. I share the opinion that I've heard from other people that there were maybe one or two sort of more wobbly moments in the first half, but particularly in the second half, he was really, really effective and did loads of the stuff that you would expect to have seen from Calvin Phillips in the same circumstance. I think you posted on your timeline as well last night, John, about him being maybe... about him offering something slightly different to Calvin when he's in that role in terms of his sort of mid-range passing. And that was something that I really picked out in the game, particularly in the second half, where the sort of those like forward passes just on the ground is not something that I really associate with Calvin in that role, but you did see a few times with Strouk. And I thought that generally that he like helped us sort of move forward with his passing. I thought generally it was more positive than it has sometimes been in that role, which was really encouraging. I'll be interested to see the proportion of his passing in terms of how much progressive yardage he generated versus his total yardage of passing, which, if I remember from last season, that was one place where there was a distinction between him and Calvin in that role statistically. So I'll be interested to see how that compared. And I think he showed for the ball well. I think he generally passed it well and showed a nice range of passing, to use a term that often gets talked about in terms of Calvin, spraying it out to both wings. There was a really nice clip ball out to the right wing in the first half. I can't remember. I think it was to Shackleton. I can't remember exactly when in the half that he did. And as well, another thing that was encouraging, I think at some points, when we've seen that passing from him before, sometimes the passes have been a bit slower, but I thought that at points there was a bit better pace on those passes as well, which was really good. The one caveat I will throw in is that the game suited him there. He didn't have to be running all over the pitch after Bruno Fernandes or someone, as Calvin has sometimes relished in the past. And also there was space for him to make those passes. I think that last season his two best showings in the role were the two games against Aston Villa, even though he got subbed early in both of them. And in that respect, I don't think the game was too dissimilar, but I think it was a really encouraging performance. And I was going to say long may it continue, but obviously we want Calvin back in the team. But long may it continue, should he be playing there.
Yeah, Jacob just pretty much ticked off every single bullet point that I've got written down. The thing I'll say is that I actually think that Strauch played that better than I think Phillips would have done yesterday in that game. I think he did all the pivoty stuff that you expect from that player in that role. I think he did man mark well. Even when he was having to track a player quite deep into Wolves' half.
He pressured the goalkeeper at one point.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. There was one point where I was like, what's he doing there? But he's if he was doing the right thing, so I can't really complain. And like you said about the passing, he just made good decisions on the ball, when to sort of retain possession, when to sort of speed it up, the balls he went for. And I think he's, like you said, I think he just offers that a little bit better than Phillips does, but it's not a key feature of that role, so it's not. And I would never say, "Oh, play Strauch for his passing over Phillips in that role." I would just never say that. I think it is easier to look good in the with that sort of passing, with that space and time on the ball that Wolves gave him, because the times when people have been calling for Strauch not to play in that position are like Arsenal away last year, where he was just absolutely harassed in the middle of the pitch. But that isn't something that Phillips is adverse to either. The Man City game at Elland Road last year, for example, Phillips was pressured and was basically didn't have any role sort of in possession because of that. So it's not, I don't think it's just a Strauch thing that he struggles in those games. It's just that position struggles in those games if people target him. So, but yeah, Strauch, I would have no worries about playing Strauch in that role, and would agree with you, John, that I don't think the drop off from Phillips to Strauch is really much at all, to be honest.
If I just may add one last thing on that, just to completely agree with the thing you said there, Tom, about the role it being impacted when there is that high pressure, and we see that whoever's playing there. You mentioned Phillips, obviously, from that Man City game, but then there's also Click last week. He wasn't really involved at all, and as well, certain games where we've seen Robin Koch there, the team hasn't functioned perfectly when that pressure has been there as well. So it's, I don't think that's a Strauch thing. I think it's like you say, it's a role thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to wax lyrical about Pascal, but you guys have done a pretty good job of it. I think just the one thing that I would add would be that I think part of the reason why Pascal looked good yesterday and looked like he had time on the ball is because I think on the ball he's slightly better than Calvin Phillips in terms of his control. So when the ball comes in, I think he's often able to take a positive touch on the ball, and that allows him to make the passes that he's going to make slightly easier. I think that it's really important to think of that role as primarily a defensive role, and we talk a lot about how Bielsa calls it the third defender. And I think in light of that fact, there's no one who's ever going to be better than Calvin Phillips in our squad at playing that role, because he is the best mobile defender in our squad. Pascal is a lot of things, but he's not I don't think a particularly... Well, I don't think he's not mobile, but I think the mobility that you need to play that role is very much being able to just change direction, move off at speed one way or the other, get between pressures quickly. So I think that the fact that, that Strout maybe has a slightly better first touch than Phillips, which I think a lot of people will consider sacrilege, but I'm going to say it anyway. I just think that he's slightly better on the ball as well, so he's a little bit more press resistant as well. And I think that just allows you to be able to make those more positive passes a little bit more easily. But the other thing I would say is that Calvin Phillips plays that role as very much a sort of gung-ho, get into pressures, move from like tackle to tackle. Whereas if you watch this, particularly the second half yesterday, Pascal's positioning is absolutely perfect in so many situations. And so what you see him doing is just intercepting the ball a lot. And so he doesn't have to jump into challenges because his positioning is so good that he is just in the right place for the play. And so I think that in part as well, that makes it look like it was a less defensive performance. But I think he's still doing a lot of that work as well. And I may just go on Wisescout in a minute and just clip his performance and make a football Twitter video and put it out somewhere. But it is well worth going back and watching. I know that we bang on about Pascal a lot, but I genuinely do think it was one of his better performances in general yesterday, let alone the fact that he's sort of playing quote unquote out of position. But time is running on and we've spent ages talking about Pascal, so let's just fire through this last question quickly. So this is from Chris Woodall, who says, do you think we should play the 4-1-4-1, which is possibly our best system, regardless of how the opposition are lining up? Is the changing shape constantly having a negative effect on our form?
We could do, but we'd have to make at least some adjustment to thinking about how we're performing the man-marking system, I think. Sometimes we've had games, I'm thinking particularly of the second game against Crystal Palace last year, the home game, where like Calvin would mark a second striker, but so I guess it's possible that our defensive midfielder could drop onto one of the strikers and then move forward in possession. But I would be wary of it only in the sense of then I would be worried about like an overload of attacking players if they're able to effectively shut down two centre backs with two centre forwards. We haven't got that man spare, so it's just about, like, I guess, positionally what that would mean, and that would probably depend on which striker that they're marking. I guess on the other positive side, it could mean that we then have a bit more space in front or behind the first line of pressure if we had fewer players in that space and there were still that many opposition players there. We'd have an extra man to then do stuff with if we could beat that first line of pressure, but it might be harder.
Yeah, for me, this is all structure. Like, if you're going to do man-to-man, then it's better for you to match the opposition structurally, because otherwise you're going to have players losing their men and also having to run further to get into that position. So the solution to playing 4-1-4-1 would also be to start playing a zonal system, which isn't going to happen, I think. Tom, anything to add?
Just to, like you say, that the formations are a defensive thing for Leeds, so we're not going to see any change with it that way. There are probably... And I think what Chris is trying to get at is that there are probably some adjustments that we could make to the 3-3-1-3 to make it sort of slightly better and more like the 4-1-4-1, but it's difficult to say exactly what that would be, apart from, like, one of the things maybe would be the centre-back pushing out and helping to be the pivot, which you don't really get, but apart from that, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think that's, for me, what I would do, especially if it's someone like Pascal, who you can afford to then just push up in possession systems. The problem, I think, with the Southampton game in that respect was we didn't really have possession for long enough to even make that move. And I know that Bielsa did talk about moving Pascal forward, but I didn't, on the watch back, I just didn't see any evidence that that was sort of trying to happen. So I do think that's a good suggestion. Right, let's move to the Statric Bamford section. This is the section where we talk about an interesting aspect of the game from a stats point of view. As I've said, the FB ref data isn't up yet, so we're relying on Squawker Football. Tom, you found a tweet?
Yeah, so they're just going to read out the tweet. So it was saying that Joe Geldart had more touches in the opposition box than any other player in today's game, so yesterday's game, with 13. And no Leeds player had more shots, so he had 3 shots, more shots on target, 1, and this was despite him coming on as a sub in the 63rd minute. So I just wondered what you guys made of that, because I think there's a there's probably a few conclusions you could maybe come to from that.
Yeah, I did notice that Joe Donahue tweeted about this as well, and he showed that the touches that he got, majority came from that dribble into the box, and then the chance that he has at the left hand side on the post. This again is a volume thing. It's come from, I think it's probably all come from three actions, which is obviously a good thing, but you don't often see players pick the ball up, dribble into the box and retain possession in the way that he did. So Jacob, what did you make of this?
I think it's good to have that caveat that you just raised there, John, but I think it's also encouraging that there is someone who's doing it. When I saw this stat, the first thing almost that came into my head, even though it's not really the same thing, was Bamford's third goal against Aston Villa in the hat-trick last season. It's just nice to have someone who is working well on the ball in tighter spaces in that part of the pitch. And I think apart from Rafinha and maybe just in certain circumstances Tyler Roberts, I just think that that's something that we're lacking from our forward players. And so, yeah, I'm just glad that we have an option of someone who's happy to do that kind of thing. But compare it to the first half where we just weren't getting into the box really at all. Like a lot of our play was around the box rather than in it. It's that encourages me.
The two conclusions I took were that it's nice to see Gerhardt having an impact, but it's also like worrying that he was leading all those categories despite coming on the 63rd minute, and is probably a bit of a negative about some of our forward players yesterday.
Right, let's move on. In the interest of time, we are getting quite late. So let's just have a quick talk about the game next week. Obviously, we've got a game against Arsenal midweek in the Carabao Cup. I'm not going to do an interview with anyone on this because I suspect it will be a little bit of a throwaway game given the current squad situation. So I don't think there's any point really getting too deep into that one. Hopefully, it will just be a nice game to just not worry about too much, just a bit of a free hit. So hopefully we'll see a lot of youngsters played, and it'll be quite a fun game to watch. But as you all know, we've got Norwich the weekend, and I've just noticed that they've switched to a 3-5-2 recently. So here we go. That means we will be playing a back three again. So we can have an encomium about how bad it is that when we build up in a three. But we'll see, because this is obviously a 3-5-2 versus a 3-5-2, which is usually quite fun. It will mean that we will have the conversation about which strikers we should play as well, so I look forward to that as well. So I'll give you guys just a chance to sort of raise the questions that you think are going to be interesting going into this one, and we'll do a fuller preview podcast on our Patreon channel this week. So Tom, what did you have?
Yeah, so one of my questions was about the two up front. Would it be a chance for Gerhardt to start? You'd imagine that it's Rodrigo staying there, so it's probably one of Gerhardt or Tyler Roberts or Dan James. So I think that's just something to look out for. I haven't really got any sort of more points on that. But it was also with us sort of being should be a lot better team than Norwich, and will we look to try and retain possession in a much better way than we've seen in other games, and will they give us the chance to do that? So yeah, those are the two things I'll be looking out for and probably have a bit more of a dig into this week.
And Jacob, what was the questions that you had regarding this game?
Like you say, I always have fun when we play 3-5-2. I think it's a really interesting formation for Bielsa's Leeds. My question, I guess, is around what that will actually practically look like for us on the pitch. And there's a good sort of comparison between the two games against Sheffield United last season, who obviously played 3-5-2. In the first game, we played the 1-0 win. We properly played a 3-5-2 in possession, out of possession. Dallas was in midfield. The two wingers, Harrison and Costa, were basically commanding the whole wing. And then in the other game, the 2-1 win that we had, it felt much more like we were trying to do something in possession that was more similar to how we normally play. And it felt like Ayling and Alioski were attacking as fullbacks, but then when it came to defending, Ayling was doing the job as one of the back three, and it was Alioski and Rafinha who were pressing the two wingbacks. So my question is, what structure are we going to see? Are we going to have one set of players sort of out wide or two? And it would be interesting to see where we then exploit and where we prioritise having more players.
I've just noticed on the running order that you've written, someone asked Bielsa in the press conference afterwards why we were playing a back four against two strikers, and Bielsa's answer was that we weren't.
Yeah.
That's cracking. Anyway, these sorts of questions, we don't have the time to really dig into at this point, but we do fortunately have a full hour that we will dedicate to this in the week on our Patreon channel. We will be speaking to the guys from CanaryCast, asking for their lowdown on what must be a truly miserable season for them, no doubt. So that it might be worth signing up just for the price of admission alone for that. But we will then have a good 40 minutes conversation between the guys on the podcast then about how we approach the Norwich game, what to look forward to, how the game should ebb and flow. So if that sounds interesting, do head over to our Patreon channel, which is www.patreon.com/allstatsaren't we. And we do have video content over there and bonus podcasts as well. I think we're going to have maybe a bonus podcast this week. So lots to look forward to over there. But this does bring us to the end of a fairly long podcast, for which I apologise. But all there is for me to do is to say thank you to Jacob.
Thanks very much.
And thank you to Tom.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you all very shortly.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.